for our third podcast, we're bringing you a former stand-up comedian. He was a teacher. He was on Dragon's Den and turned down their offer. He is now one of the shining lights in the world of motivational coaching and keynote speaking. He's an author, and his top tip and his piece of advice is so easy to understand, but unfortunately so difficult to do. We bring you Gavin Oates.
How would I describe me? It's always funny when people put you on the spot like that and say, who are you and what do you do? Because I obviously know the answer to this, but then my brain always thinks, how are you going to describe this today, Gavin? If I go back a little bit, when I left school, I went off to train as a primary school teacher because it was all I ever wanted to do. My mum was a teacher, my aunts and uncles are all teachers. And for me, I didn't really know any other way of, having a job. In my head was this, it was this picture of you turn up to work and you help people and you aim to make a difference in these wee people's lives, you know? But I also had a real passion for stand-up comedy. Like, I was obsessed with people like Vic Reeves and Bob Mortimer and Billy Connolly and Monty Python. And long story short, I fell in love with the world of education, getting up in front of my audience every day, aiming to make the biggest difference I could. My goal was always to make sure that the kids left happier than when they arrived in the morning. They left buzzing more than when they arrived in the morning, so that the next day they always thought, we want more of that. But my love for stand-up grew and grew and grew. And eventually, after I'd graduated as a teacher, I left teaching. I decided to call it a day for a little while to really pursue the stand-up. It took me all over the world. And this is pre-social media days where you couldn't just keep firing out videos online. You had to turn up and work. And it was one of those moments where I fell in love with that as well. But like all great rock and roll stories, the first attempt at comedy blew up in my face. After 5 years, it all went terribly wrong. And I ended up back in the classroom because I needed to make some money. And then I fell back in love with education. And then one day I went on a workshop called Putting the Fun Back in the Staff Room, which I thought, this will be rubbish. Don't want to go on this. It'll be dead cheesy and corny. And I was so wrong. It was the most inspiring, uplifting, hilarious, engaging, challenging in all the right ways event I'd ever been to. I laughed, I cried, I felt uncomfortable. I was buzzing, I was inspired. And I sat there thinking, this guy's taken primary teaching and stand-up comedy and somehow put it all together and turned it into a workshop. I want to do a bit of that. So I quit my job that day. I phoned him, asked him for a job. He said yes. And next thing I knew, I was creating a whole series of programs for teenagers, which terrified me because I'd spent the last 6 years of my life working with little kids under the age of 10. And we created all this work around mindset, resilience, creativity, mental health and well-being. And it just grew and grew and grew till eventually I went out on my own. I have my own business called Tree of Knowledge. We work still in schools, but then that work became working with teachers. That became working with businesses, which eventually led to me writing books, getting to travel the world, delivering keynote speeches at some incredible events. And the goal remains the same. It's to inspire the world. It's to turn up, make a difference, put smiles on faces, ruffle some feathers, push some buttons, and make sure people leave happier than when they arrived.
With all of the knowledge that you've kind of accumulated from that journey, what would you say is your top tip for life?
Do you know, there's a few. I think that's like somebody saying, what's your favourite album? Or what's the best song of all time? And your brain goes, there's 100 songs, try and pick one. Oh, there's a few things popped into my head straight away there. There's a particular phrase that I learned from Dr. Andy Cope, who I know you're both familiar with. And I've been lucky enough to write some books with Andy. And we talked about one of these first books that we wrote together. And it's the phrase, do less, be more. Is one that really sort of struck a chord with me. And the other one is don't be a dick. I think these are the two things that have kind of stuck with me. I always remember my dad. Now, I lost my dad a few years ago now, but saying to me, even in my early teens, if I was moaning about something or just being ungrateful, I just remember my dad saying, you're being a dick. It kind of stuck with me. And this idea of if you can't be kind, be quiet kind of thing. So, but yeah, do less, be more. And don't be a dick.
With all of our podcasts, we ask for one mystery question so that you can ask our next guest. What would your mystery question be for our next guest? And also the fun part is, how would you answer it yourself?
So my mystery question, it's funny because I've done quite a few podcasts through lockdown, and there's always these wonderful little spin-off questions that get thrown at you from the previous guest or things like that. And I always, I don't know about you guys, but I always overthink it. My mystery question, I think, would be, what is the album that changed your life? Now, the reason I'm asking that question is because I believe that everyone has an album that changed their life. Now, I'm using the word album loosely because actually it might have been a book. It might have been a theatre show. It might have been a person. But, you know, I grew up in a time where we bought albums for a start, and I realise there's a lot of people don't buy albums these days. But, you know, when I was in my teens, like going through the 90s, like a lot of stuff happened in the 90s around music. It was like the whole Britpop thing and so on. But there are moments where there were certain albums and certain songs that just changed everything for me. So I am convinced that we all have an album that changed our life. So that is my mystery question. What is the album that changed your life? And to answer it, for me, it was Dookie by Green Day. That album changed everything for me. There are other albums which I love as much, sometimes more. What age was I? I was about 14, 15. And I remember listening to that for the first time on my cassette Walkman. And
we're really throwing it back there. You're going to have a description of what that is to some of the listeners.
Well, that's it. You know, it's old school cassette. A Walkman was, it was your portable cassette player.
I loved mine. It was great. And you had your kind of folder. I had a folder of all the different CDs that you'd go and put in, or your tapes.
Yeah, no, it was brilliant. I remember putting that album on and just right from the first guitar riff, just going, what am I listening to? And it just took me on a journey. It's only about 39 minutes long, that album. And it was 39 minutes of, it was hairs on the back of your neck stuff for me. And I just remember sitting there thinking, I'm going to go take over the world. Not in an arrogant way. I'm going to go out there and I'm going to be the greatest rock and roll star of all time. Except I'm not going to be in a band and I'm not going to be an actual rock star. I'm going to find my thing and make sure I feel like this all the time. Now, I haven't felt like that all the time, but I think back to that feeling sitting on the back of the bus that day, listening to those songs for the first time, just felt alive. So, yeah.
But you've got to answer this guest mystery question. And that was from Paul McGee, a guy I'm sure you know, the sumo guy. And his question is, what's your most embarrassing moment?
Well, it depends on who you're asking. If you ask my children, they'll have many answers for you. What is my most embarrassing moment? Do you know, the one that springs to mind first, I don't know if it's my most embarrassing moment. I think I also don't get embarrassed particularly easy. I get extremely anxious and uncomfortable in situations. So I don't know if that's being embarrassed. But do you know the one I think of straight away? I did a show in my stand-up days and I've had sort of three or four incarnations of a show in the world of comedy over the years. Some have been very, very successful and some absolutely haven't been. I did a show way, way back. It must have been 2002, maybe 2000. It would have been end of 2002 in my hometown. My friend and I, who I was in a double act with, we traveled the world. We sold out a run at the Melbourne Comedy Festival in Australia. We had gigged all through. We were living the dream at a very, very young age, but it started to implode a little bit. It was falling apart at the seams. Our relationship was a bit strained by that point, you know, living out of one another's pockets all the time. Huge amount of pressure in all the shows that we were doing. Our star, if you like, was rising probably a wee bit faster than we were able to cope with and understand and deal with. My friend had not long lost his dad, and that was playing a big part in his mind and his thinking, and we were miles away from home. So it was all falling apart. And when we came home, there was this big sort of request, if you like, from everybody we knew to see the results of what we had been doing for the last however many 9-10 months we'd been away around the world performing and meeting all these incredible people. And we very much rushed a show, put together a show to put on in our hometown hall. The effort was misplaced, shall we say. Our relationship was at breaking point. The time and effort and money that was needed, it was misplaced as well. And the show was terrible. And we knew it was terrible and we went ahead with it. And it was really, really disappointing. And the whole audience just sat there for 2 hours, really flat. And it was genuinely embarrassing. It was awful. And even thinking about it now, like, I feel sick. But that one was on us. You know, we were in a terrible place by that point. We'd gone to such highs at such a young age, and it had just come crashing down about us. We shouldn't have done that show. We should have called it a day. We should have cancelled it and walked away, heads held high. Instead, we went through with it, and it failed, and it was awful. And lying in my bed that night, I mean, I was only, 24 or something. I remember lying in my bed that night just thinking that was the worst thing I've ever done in my life. It was so embarrassing.
I was going to say, what would you say that taught you about, you know, just walking away from things when the going was good and, you know, just knowing when to kind of walk away?
I think I've had a few moments in my life that have reminded me that it's okay to say no. Your sense of your desire to be famous and recognised get in the way of what's actually important? We were good as a double act. I mean, we grew up together, me and my friend. Like, we were best friends from birth, and we were on stage from only 17 with no performing background at all. Neither of us. We put ourselves on a stage, and like I say, it took us all over the world. We did the Edinburgh Fringe, but the desire to make it got in the way of what was really important there, and that was two best friends having the time of their life. And, you know, fast forward 20 years, and whilst him and I occasionally speak, that relationship was never, ever back to what it should have been. And that was because of our absolute desperation to be famous and to make it. Our energy was misplaced. That's the wrong goal to have. The goal should have been to make as many people laugh and feel great as possible. But actually, that came second to making it. And now when I look back at that and I realize the adventure that my best friend of all time and I had together, the people we met, the laughter we shared, we made it more than we ever realized. We didn't become millionaires and we didn't have a TV show, but we made it in the most important of ways. But we didn't see it. We weren't grateful for all that we'd achieved, because we wanted more. We wanted more attention and more fame. We wanted bigger and more exciting. So I learned a lot from that, Jazz, a lot from that. There comes a point in life where it's okay to say no. And if you need to save yourself, if you need to save your friendships, your marriages, whatever it might be, then you do that. You never let those things come second to trying to make it, because that doesn't mean anything. So it's another great lesson that we wrote about in Shine. Andy and I, and you'll have heard all sorts of people saying this in your careers, you know, it's happiness doesn't come from things, it comes from experiences. And my goodness, did we have an extraordinary experience? And we never saw it. We never realized it at the time. ¶¶